You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, one of my favorite guests, Carmen Bolter, returns to do another show. Carmen is the creative fire behind the Pyramid Code. She is the director, producer, and writer of the series, which has fired the imagination of people around the world. With an unshakable passion for Egypt, she has guided private tours there for decades, gaining access to places that few get to visit. Having been a professor at Calgary University, she is revolutionizing the way we learn. One of many projects that are changing the face of education is Interactive University. Carmen also authored the book Angels and Archetypes, and it's an evolutionary map of feminine consciousness. She's developing a new television show, discovering ancient sites that Indiana Jones would envy, and teaching. You can find more on her website, www.pyramidcode.com. So let's welcome her back now. Hi, Carmen. How are you?
I'm great. Hi, Lance. Nice to be back.
It's good to talk to you again. Well, you've been very busy since we last spoke, and there's so much that is going on in your life now that I'm just going to ask you what you would like to share is as the most significant thing that you would like to talk about tonight to start out with.
Well, Interactive U, it's interactive-theletteru.com, has really taken off, and now we've been I've been teaching, and I had a cohort go through the Secrets of the Ancients program, and now I'm really getting some output from the people. And so I've got a young girl in there who's 15, who's got her own radio show, and she's also been offered. She was my first guest on my TV show, Interactive U TV, Natalie Marie Hart. And so they offered her her show after they heard her speaking, and she did a full literature review. I handed in a paper, 62 pages, with 5 pages of proper references, primary references. She has a donation button on her website, and she ended up buying herself a new computer, a tablet, an HD video camera, and a tripod. And now she's going to be publishing a book and making a documentary at the age of 15.
Amazing, amazing. You're also involved with a Crystal Kids radio show, aren't you? I mean, is she one of the...
She founded that herself.
She did? Wow.
That's her network.
Wow.
I know. Wow. She's very, very impressive. And so what it shows me is that the support, the mentoring, the style of the interactive, cross-disciplinary, intercultural, multimedia online curriculum can really help people do research properly. And really, people are falling down on that. And the Internet has kind of become a free-for-all where people, you know, just take stuff. And in fact, in the last little while, we've taken the Pyramid Code off 455 YouTube channels that have claimed they had copyright, claimed that it was theirs, and all this. And so really, proper research and correct referencing and the truth has really, you know, become an obscurity in our culture. So this is really about doing it properly, giving credit where credit is due, and having original research. And so, but I'm noticing that a lot of people, you know, have been damaged by the education system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really is about, I call it hoop jump biscuit, where, you know, you have to guess what the teacher wants, not what the knowledge is.
Mm-hmm.
And people's self-esteem goes down as soon as, you know, they get a poor mark. And so it's really been quite challenging to see how people have to almost undo the education they had before.
Well, you're kind of a pioneer in that area with this Interactive University. What kind of courses, and college accredited, of course. And
well, actually, they are the same. Some of the courses are the same as I developed for online learning at the University of Calgary.
Okay.
Students were paying $1,111 to take one course.
Wow.
And I've got those in a summer school format, so 6-week courses. And so anyway, so I've got 9 faculties, and so there's a faculty of film and multimedia production and educational psychology, and the faculty of ecotourism, esoteric arts, spiritual activism, and it goes on like that. And you can see all that quite clearly if you go to interactive-letteru.com. But we also have programs, which are 5 different courses with mentoring that goes with it. So we've got Secrets of the Ancients, Interactive School for Kids, my video, my book, my research, my business. And so we walk people through learning e-commerce websites, you know, how to do all these different things, how to make a proper video, shoot and edit on the go. And so basically what it's about is not waiting for someone to give you a job, not going deeply into debt to then find out you can't get a job and you've got compounded interest for the rest of your life. But if somebody didn't give you a job, how would you find your passion, you know, shake off your shadow kind of thing, and understand psychologically what moves you forward and what holds you back, and design some kind of an innovative business that's, you know, online. And so with everybody doing the same sort of thing, then we're really, it's really a situation where people are encouraging each other, when we're realizing that we're setting up a model for an empowered humanity. So the New Atlantis is my new the new series that I've got in production. And so Richard Gardner out of Toronto, who's been a TV producer for a long time, said, well, we had the Zeitgeist movement, we had the Thrive movement, and he would like to see the New Atlantis be a movement. So the platform is Interactive U, for us to collaboratively come up with a model for an empowered humanity. That really is the matriarchal values, where it's collaboration instead of competition. It's inclusion instead of exclusion. It's empowerment instead of power over. Mm-hmm. And so it's a values-driven platform that allows us to work together, and it's working beautifully. It really, really is. So we're writing collaboratively, we're learning animation collaboratively, and it's a very exciting way to go. So there's live sessions every week, and there's work meetings online every week. And, yeah, it's an invitation for people, but it really is about moving you from where you are. And so pretty much it should start with a consultation, and it's very program and output driven. So what would your project be? And so people can think long and hard, you know, like if you could find out anything, what would your research question be? And I went through this before I wrote my book, when I was director of the Women's Therapy and Research Center for 10 years in Calgary. I was sent practicum students from the Southern Alberta Institute of Technology and research assistants. And they said, okay, these assistants can go and dig and find references and articles for you, but what's the question? And my research question was, what happened when we had matriarchal culture that was peaceable and civilized that gave way to patriarchy? Mm. And that's where angels and archetypes came from. So we're talking about modeling here, using a model that's worked before. So I've been developing this model for 14 years. It took 3 years to build the platform. And, of course, everybody wants it for free because it's online. Hello.
Right. Well, you know, as they say, nothing is free, and we don't truly appreciate what we don't pay for in some way, at least on an energetic level.
That's right.
So I am curious. I would just tell people where they can find that again, what the website is.
Interactive-theletteru.com.
Okay, got it. And anybody can participate in this, is that correct?
Yep, it's no age specification. There's no real prerequisites, except that you need to know how to have basic computer skills on a computer that's got high enough bandwidth that you can do video and that sort of thing. And a certain amount of motivation, because unfortunately what our culture has done is turn most people into spectators instead of, you know, agents of change.
Right.
So it's not really about just watching and being entertained by it, though some people are pleased to have that happen. So, so it's anybody who, like, I imagine people who never finished their dissertation, or, you know, people who started in a university program that they weren't able to finish for some reason because they didn't get the support they needed, can come and pick up where they left off. But what's happening is that the Interactive School for Kids is a program supporting parents to help unschool or homeschool their kids. And now there's even a concept called World School.
Oh.
Where Yeah, so you know they go do ecotourism, the psychology of eco-adventure, that sort of thing. And so it really isn't about sitting on the computer all day. It's about recording what you're doing and then posting it somehow. And so, you know, it's basically using, you know, smartphones and videos. And all we want to see video now. So how can we make that, how can we animate things? How can we really tell a clear story, you know, that's original and make things? So it's social constructivism. So constructivism being we make things. So you build on what you already know. It's meaning-centered. And constructivism is a model, an educational model. But social constructivism started with Vygotsky years ago, and that's basically joining with other people to create something that's meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the courses have the same parallel structure. So it starts with theoretical framework, and then it goes to relevant research. So we're teaching people what real research looks like, and then there's three interactive processes. Interactive process one is self-reflection, so you watch things that are pertinent to the topic. Watch, relate, reflect, and make little notes, and then you post those notes. There's several things that you do along the way. And then once you post them, you get to read what everybody else says. So you're not just sitting on, you know, being a cheering committee saying, yeah, I think so too. The second interactive process, after you read things and you see what other people think, the idea is to collaborate with somebody and create something, so some kind of a presentation or a little video or something like that. And then so the second interactive process is collaboration. And the third is social action. So after you've built something with maybe one person, then you look around the class to see what other people are doing. And let's give an example. There's an aromatherapy course, and each team would probably, you know, make a recipe for headaches or various issues, pain, whatever. And then they could compile it into a booklet and take it to an old folks home or something like that. So the purpose of creating is to then give it back to the community in an organized fashion and, you know, keep databases and showcase what the students are doing. So because a lot of people really fall down on the speaker circuit and don't do their research properly, or they're just doing secondary references, which is people talking about other people's work on the internet, I don't really want to be for my show, I'm not really interested in interviewing, you know, people who are on the speaker circuit. I want to showcase my student work, which is why I had Natalie Marie on as my first guest. And so I think it's a really good platform to show what can be done, because, of course, we don't really adopt technology or do these sorts of things unless we see someone else doing it. Modeling is very important.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything we've done to build the system, to build the platform, is what we're teaching. And so after a while, you just catch on, because it's the same thing. Even though academic writing's been, you know, the biggest secret, and proper research is, you know, something that most students in universities get very, very poor supervision, or none. And I know, you know, having done a few PhD programs, that you basically don't get too much supervision from your professors. And so, so this is really about fixing all of that, normalizing the proper way to do things, and just trending it all. And so everybody's doing the same thing. And so, you know, people can write a literature review, and then that's what Natalie's doing. She's turning it into a book. And so, interestingly, she's at the top of the class. You know, her brain is, you know, really active, and she hasn't been damaged by the school system because she's been homeschooled.
Oh.
So, you know, she's got time to do it. And when she handed in this fancy paper, I actually asked her mother if she had helped her. And her mother went, I don't know how to help her. I don't know any of that stuff.
Wow.
And then I asked Natalie Marie, I said, did your mother help you? And she goes, well, no, because if she did, then what good does it do me?
Huh.
I can't continue,
wow.
And I don't know how to do it. It's not really help.
Does she watch television?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
No, and, she doesn't. She know. And no, she's too busy building stuff. You
and
know?
She was
so,
homeschooled.
Yeah, and so the thing. What I'm watching, though, because I spend like 3 hours, you know, unpacking her each draft she does, like giving
wow.
her feedback, and you know, showing all the places where you can't notice everything at the beginning. But the first paper she handed in was at least as good as any grad student I ever had.
Oh, wonderful!
I know. And so, but what I'm watching is she's becoming more articulate. And so we did a 2-hour interview, and she carried it.
Wonderful.
So,
wow.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
You know, no, it's quite amazing. And because she's like, well, you know, the future is in kids' hands. We've got to get clear here. So I can only hope that other students will follow and be as strong as she is.
Well, yes. I mean, you were a professor at Calgary, a university, for many years, and you know, so, and I know that you follow a very strict code of research, and I'm curious to know if you've noticed over the years, since you've taught and interacted with so many people around the world, if there's a general trend of people becoming less motivated, less intelligent, or less creative, less, I mean, or more. Maybe it's gone in the other direction. I suspect that, you know, most people seem to be going in the direction of becoming spectators and not even thinking too clearly because everybody else is doing their thinking for them.
That's right. Well, in school, we're told what to think, not how to think. And no, I'm noticing a real frightening downturn in people's ability to produce, to create. I call it systemic distress. People are, you know, worried under a lot of pressure, financial strains. People in their family are sick. Their dogs are dying. You know, like really, like there's so much toxicity in mentally, emotionally, spiritually. There's a lot of pressure. And one case in point is I had a student at University of Calgary, a grad student, who performed in one of my classes and got an A+.
Mm-hmm.
Came back a year and a half later to take another course and got a B. Now that blew my mind.
Hmm.
Because I'm like, wait a minute, you can do it. You, this person, learn to do it right. So what's in the way?
Mm-hmm.
So what I just said, systemic distress, you know, they've got a new kid, the kids are playing computer games, they've got financial stress, the mother's got cancer, you know, and all of a sudden perhaps they did one draft instead of three because they just didn't have time to focus or something. But that's very disturbing to me.
Well, yes, and it does seem that as, you know, there's more communication, there's less ability to communicate. You know, people are talking in sound bites and, you know, the stress levels that are coming in from so many assaults on our health and our well-being, you know, from all the sources that we've talked about over the, you know, over the years, is taking its toll. We are just at a point where it seems that we just can't go on much further without getting into a breakdown.
Well, it's very serious because the other thing is that on TV, the news, Hollywood, truth is an option. And people lie to each other in every single TV show. You know, I'm so worried about the, how are you fine? You know, we're lying about everything emotionally. And it's all about, you know, stealing and scamming and getting and taking and hurting and, you know, being a bully and, you know, these sorts of messages we get, whether or not we're watching TV, these messages are trickling down from the collective of the American foreign policy, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just find a boogeyman, find an enemy, get together and say, well, we don't like him, throw mud at him and pat yourself on the back for getting rid of the enemy. Well, it's like, well, whatever happened to we are one and inclusive things and, you know, fitting together. That's seriously missing. But the other thing is that trickles down. If it's online, if it's on Facebook, you know, that's my picture. No, it's the person who took the picture's picture. But everybody's just passing things around and not giving credit where credit is due.
Mm-hmm.
And people feel that if they see it online, they can take it and make it theirs. And this is a very serious infringement with the Pyramid Code. Because I'm going to just tell you straight up here, it cost me $550,000 to make it, and I got $130,000 back.
Wow.
And 4.25 million hits and counting on YouTube for free, and people wanting the next series for free. It's why should I work that hard and spend my own money and have people say, well, no, it's not really yours, and I can take it and call it something else. But when I try to post something, like if I were to try to post this interview with your permission, because
you have
I'm
it.
In it, and there was a song on it, I wouldn't be able to post it because it's third-party content. Well, what about my third-party content? But people are unabashed. And when we took it down, one person said they were sorry, and they knew they didn't have my permission. Other people are saying, No. You gave me permission on Facebook 16 months ago. No, I never even heard of you. And Facebook permission doesn't count. It's got to be a document in writing. And so people are, you know, I found it with Romanian, Polish, and Italian subtitles, with a Czechoslovakian soundtrack, Russian, Arabic, and English.
Wow.
Pretty much all stolen.
Well, you know, now that you know how the world works, your new series, which is The New Atlantis, right?
Yes.
It is being funded on Indiegogo.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't you tell us a little bit about that? Because you do, there's nobody in the world that makes these kind of productions like you. There is just nobody else that I know of that is doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
And the quality and the research and the thought-provoking, stimulating material that's in your stuff, you know, your videos, especially the Pyramid Code, are just beyond, they're really the standard that other people follow, and nobody, I don't see anybody really coming up to that. It just isn't happening in the archaeological world. And so why don't you tell us a little bit about the New Atlantis and how people can contribute to it so that this travesty that's happened to you doesn't happen again.
Thank you. And well, let me just tell you how I got here, because I had, you know, networks approach me, I had funders approach me, and, you know, did 6 months of network meetings with a director, producer, and my agent from New York. And they had me rewrite the script 4 times. I had already written it once, and they had me rewrite it 4 more times. And they led me to, you know, I illustrated everything. They wanted, you know, cover page, 1 page per episode, cast of characters, whole thing. Gave them this impeccable document, parallel structure in the writing, you know, really every picture in it, you know, film strips on the side that tied to real things and, you know, developing a through line, all this. Well, after I submitted my final copy, they completely abandoned it. They rewrote it with, like, a first draft with, you know, poor punctuation and capitalization. Oh. Everything was fake in it. They had Quetzalcoatl castrated. They had Foam Woman in the Pacific Ocean. And in the end, Atlantis was in Alberta, because that's where the director lived. And then they had the audacity to ask me to illustrate it, but it was all fantasy. Nothing was real. And
wow.
So basically, if you get the big networks involved, they want to make your stuff fake.
Mm-hmm.
Disneyland.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I went through that, and then I ended up with another team, which is part of the dig that we can talk about in a sec. And I found this site. I had the GPS coordinates. I found somebody who was going to able to do a high definition state of the art satellite scan with technology that's almost never been seen before. And we made a presentation. We're going to go to Egypt. And they put their names, the copyright on my presentation. That was all my work. I spent weeks poring over the data and the measurements and made all these charts and graphs. And then they wanted to have their copyright because they're sitting next to me. Well, then they started telling everybody that the scan was theirs. And I'm like, no. They went to people on the speaker circuit and said they have this new information. But I never digitized the scan because I didn't want it to be copied and have anybody do that. So I've been trying to protect myself all along with this, because I studied international copyright law and intellectual property, right? And so I know the rules because I'm a professor, right? Well, because I, you know, at that level, I'm researching things. And so there came a point where I had to go public and just say, you know, this is what I found, this is when I found it, this is how it happened, with a date and time stamp. So if they came out to say it's theirs, I already got the copyright, and I claimed it first, because it's mine. It is mine. The thing is, anybody can say it's theirs, but is it or isn't it? And this doesn't seem to matter. This is the big trend out there. So, full circle, Indiegogo is all right. For the people who like the Pyramid Code, who want more, support me. Support me to be able to finish it. So I've been in production for a long time, and I'm deep into it already, financially as well. And I need money to finish it, because if I wait for other people and the big networks and whatnot, it will not be accurate. Right? And there's a lot to this story. And we're finding new pyramids all over the place. You know, and that's what this is about. Like, and what is being done now, because there's new pyramids being built that are functional pyramids. And that's another story in itself, but
right.
Being built in Russia.
Russia.
And And the New Atlantis is actually a project that has 12 different domains: communication, education, transportation, you know, all these IT, health, all of these different domains that are looking at, and my words are a model for an empowered humanity, but like, if the system, when the system crashes, what do we replace it with? Like, where is the logic and the values? We're in a crisis of values, and how can we set things up to have the values that are going to move humanity forward instead of just raping and pillaging and hurting everyone? Now, humanity's on its knees. There's a lot of suffering going on out there.
Well, now, the Russian scientists that you went over and met and saw the pyramids, haven't they researched the cycles of time and places that where the Earth travels and found that we are in a place where there could be a lot of traumatic occurrences on the Earth, and their idea is to build these pyramids in various places to stabilize the entire planet, but they have to be built in different countries, and of course that requires collaboration and so on. Do you think there's any connection between all of the pyramids that are around the world and the ones that the Russian scientists are wanting to create to get us through this period? Is this a recurring cycle of the 26,000 years that we have just finished in 2012?
Well, actually, not quite. And
okay.
the Russian scientists, I don't know that they can and will build pyramids all around the world, but what you just said sounds more like Atlantis, that that when there was foreknowledge, there were three different catastrophes in Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
The second, I don't know what the date of the first one is. The second one was 17,500 BC, and the there's ancient texts that talk about this. And the third one was 13,660. And there's things that have led me to understand that when they knew that there was going to be another catastrophe, there were evacuation committees that would, okay, what are we going to do with the technology? How are we going to protect the people? What can we do? And the decision was to colonize around the planet and build straight-sided pyramids that were functional, that on the telluric grid, the places where the grids crossed, and in order to stabilize the Earth, and this is in the Pyramid Code, and to shore up this psychological, to feed the people with energy that would assist as we came tumbling down in the processional cycle toward the Iron Age, losing the refinement of the Golden Age.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the model that they're using in Russia is using Plato's circles within circles,
mm-hmm.
with the largest pyramid in the middle and four satellite pyramids on the first circle and four satellite pyramids on the second. And this is a working pyramid. In fact, there's a story of one of the construction workers before the casing stones went on or anything, and he had this terrible, terrible asthma, and he had this spontaneous healing where half his body broke out in a sweat and he was just trembling, and then it pushed through, and after that he had no asthma, like a real miraculous kind of thing. Standing inside the pyramid before it was even finished. Now, I will say that the technology that they've been using in order to build these pyramids seems to be authentically connected to the pyramids of Giza and pyramids they're finding around the world. Now, it stands to reason that if the Bosnian pyramid in Serbia, and there's pyramids in South Africa and all over, many, many, many places, Ganan Padang now, and you know, there's places now where there's pyramids just popping up there in China, and many, 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 many places. And it's surprising. But most of them, of these ones, like the Bosnian pyramids, they don't look straight-sided because they've got trees growing on them. But the reason that trees can grow is that after the flood, the silt in the water from the flood stayed on the pyramid, and it's like 3 to 4 feet thick, which is enough to grow trees. And so the trees are all different heights, so it makes the pyramid not look straight, right? But
mm-hmm.
they're excavating one section of the Pyramid of the Sun in Bosnia. And then there's all kinds of experiments that they've done and studies with various instrumentation to ascertain that it really is a live pyramid. And there's many characteristics, and we could go into that. But the thing is that a lot of these pyramids were hidden because they're covered in soil, right, and trees. And so we didn't realize what it was. But what does that mean? It's pre-diluvian. If the receding waters from the great floods left the silt, then the pyramids were there before the flood.
Wow.
And so people come along and say, oh, no, there's nothing to the Bosnian pyramids. They gave Dr. Sam, you know, the rights to manage the archaeological dig, and he's doing a fine job of that. And then the media said, ixnay, nobody's going to talk about this on mainstream media. Mm-hmm. And Zahi Hawass came and said, there's nothing to it. Robert Shaw came and said, there's nothing to it. Meanwhile, they're collecting tremendous data. And something I've seen is a carbon-14 dating, which makes everything look younger, but nevertheless, between the third and the fourth course of the excavated part of the outside of the Pyramid of the Sun, they found some organic material that could be carbon-14 dated. And I saw their certificate with my own eyes. 38,000 years.
Wow. Very good, very good.
Yes. Yes, it's incredible. And the other thing is that the tunnel system underneath the Bosnian pyramids has been decommissioned, at just like Göbekli Tepe was in Turkey, where they've got 22 temples, but only one or two have been excavated. And it was also decommissioned. So what I'm saying here is there's evidence, like real evidence, that there was foreknowledge of the flood. And in order to preserve these two sites, at least, the tunnel system was filled in.
Aha. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. So I think that the network of pyramids, it's not possible with world governments and the amount of money it takes. I mean, these the one pyramid in Russia cost $5 million. Well, I suppose that's not very much in today's, you know,
right,
dollars
that's
and
some
cents.
Change.
But the thing is that governments aren't coordinated. I mean, unless it's the cabal doing it, you know, if it really makes sense for people and it's going to help people, they won't let you do it. So
we're
still under the thumb of the powers that pretend, and you know, we're trying to hide all this material. But too bad, it's still happening.
And that's part of the patriarchy that you are talking about.
That's right. And matriarchal ways of being and thinking is, you know, the timelessness and the symbolism and all those things. If you can't see it, it's not there. It's a patriarchal way of doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's also, in the last 5,000 years, it's been the patriarchal period. And even Egypt from 3113 BC, which is the beginning of the Mayan calendar, that was the beginning of patriarchal Egypt 5,000 years ago. And the agenda of the patriarchy is to erase evidence of everything other than itself.
Mm. Well, you know, it's funny because we've done shows back before 2012, and you were absolutely right. I was subject to magical thinking about what was going to happen, and you wisely said that it wasn't going to be that way. You know, that I thought there would be some kind of instant transformation, you know, and the crystalline stairs would just kind of flow out of the sky. And I'm getting more realistic about it, and you wisely said that no, things will slowly start to shift in the, you know, in the direction of a lighter golden age. But it's not just that we jump into a golden age; it's that we are transitioning out of the lowest of the ages, the Kali Yuga. And it couldn't be clearer that if things get much lower, well, then we'll be completely enslaved and zombified and we won't know it, and we don't know it now, so maybe we're not far from there.
Well, exactly. And the thing is, though, is as the energy has been making us more psychic and, you know, nuts and berries and, you know, the second most popular restaurant out of 1,400 restaurants in my city of Victoria here is the vegan restaurant called Be Love. Everyone wants to go there because it's pure food, because we know, you know, so those kinds of things are, that's how I know that's a trend. And so there's a word, unconsciential millennials who won't watch TV, who understand that, you know, that what we're being told on the news isn't true, who, you know, seek knowledge about antediluvian things, who, you know what I mean? Like, they're a completely different breed of kid. You know, they're all excited about supporting each other in Indiegogo campaigns, and that's where I'm meeting a lot of them. And they're a different breed, and they don't believe for one second that what we're being told by the media is true. Now, does that give us a new world? No. Does it give new trends about how to go about doing things? Yes. You know, does it mean that their attention span isn't longer than a few minutes? You know, basically, it's like, can't make anything longer than 2 minutes because people won't watch it. And in some ways, you know, the hits, if you look at Google Analytics, you know, people stay 2 seconds. But they, you know, 2 seconds, and they call that surfing. You know, well, so there's problems with it all, but it's not business as usual.
Well, thank goodness for that. Thank goodness for that.
Mm-hmm. But it's very worrying because it seems like the dark forces are upping their game of making it harder and harder, and, you know, insurance, taxes, interest, utilities. It's all a game in their favor, and none of that should cost us a thing. You know, none of it works at all. But it's got everybody going around in circles, and it's abuse of the public. You know, you call up, and I called a utility company the other day, and I was on hold for, whatever, 25 minutes. But every 10 seconds, they went, please do not hang up. Your call will be answered in the order that it was. And it's like, that was 150 times.
Uh-huh.
I had to listen to that. That's abuse. That it was, like, making me crazy. It's
and
come on.
But, yeah, who knows what was being transmitted in those beeps as well. The technologies of mind control have been advanced to such a state that we're all subject to HARP and electronic frequency control and, you know, chemtrails and nanotechnology. And, I mean, it goes on and on and on. And, of course, the military-industrial complex has developed everything as a weapon. So everything gets weaponized first. And then after 10 or 15 years after they've had it privately and nobody knows about it, they start to leak it out, and then something beneficial might be released out of, you know, 1,000 weapons that are already going on around us.
Well, it's so, not only that, it's Wi-Fi and everything else, smart meters. I mean,
right?
That is interfering with people's health. And it's just, it's very, very serious. And so now, I just saw a document yesterday that there were 1,400 studies done that they knew that it was going to be dangerous, and they let it pass anyway.
Oh,
because they chose the frequency that replicates the human body. They could have chosen a different frequency because we had wireless technology in Atlantis, and it was a dream. But they chose it absolutely to be interfering with people. So you hear people talking about, oh, I got all these headaches, I got blurry vision, I can't sleep, I got cramps in my leg. Well, that's Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm. Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
I like that. Well, you know, you travel so much, and you speaking the praises of the smartphones and all those things. And I just didn't have any reason to get on all that stuff. And you suffered the results of that personally. So you know what happens when somebody reaches critical mass and their body starts to shut down.
Well, I got my first router in 1996. I had my first computer in 1982. I worked in Taiwan, and the first day I arrived there, I worked as a professor, my colleague said, let's go and get your cell phone. I go, why do I need that? And they go, relax. You're not going to be able to function here without one. You're getting one. And then I came back to Canada, and everybody was, what do you need that for? And it took years and years and years before people caught on, and everybody has one. But they're so much more advanced in technology in Asia, and the other thing is things are so cheap they can get the whole suite of, you know, 200 channels and their smartphone and everything all bundled together, internet, the whole thing, for like $20 a month. It's like, really? And it works better. And the Korean kids come here and go, oh, your internet is so slow. Anyway, so I took 48 flights. That in 2012, I went to Russia, I went to Bosnia, I went to Egypt twice, I went, you know, here. And I had to go through the big scanners only twice, and I really didn't feel good about it. But then when you opt out, you stand next to the machine for 10 minutes while they go get somebody to feel you up. Pat you down, sorry. And still, you're everywhere. The airports, you can't get outside, there isn't enough, you know, trees and plants in there and you can't get to the real air, and so it just wears you down, and it's like getting an x-ray every 9 minutes when you're in the air. So as a result of years and years and years of sleeping with the Wi-Fi on and everything and just being surrounded with it, I ended up with radiation poisoning. And the first thing they did when they took me into the hospital is they put me on morphine. I thought, well, don't you put people who are dying on morphine? It's like, it seemed a little bit too readily available. And it did change the, you know, the absolute malfunction going on in my body. It kind of stopped it, and, you know, and then I started to get better. But I had friends come to my house with EMF, electromagnetic frequency meters, and radiation meters. And they said, you're living in the soup. Anything wireless, Bluetooth, I was front of the class with all that stuff too. Wireless doorbell, cordless phone, you know, Bluetooth trackpad, all that stuff, in addition to Wi-Fi and smart meters, was just making toxic soup. So I got rid of all of it and hardwired. It's not that hard. I mean, at first it was like, well, I can't walk around with my devices. Well, when you're on the computer, you're sitting in one place. That's all there is to it. If it's going to make you feel healthy, fine. Now, it doesn't mean I don't have Wi-Fi, because friends come and they want to use it. And I say, okay, use it and then turn it off. They always forget to turn it off, practically. But I can feel it. And so I've healed now. It took a year and a half, though. But it's not that hard. I mean, I got a dog, so doesn't matter if I have a doorbell. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that hard. And you can use the Bluetooth speakers and plug it in. Now, it seems old-fashioned, but if it doesn't drive you crazy and hurt your, you know, but there's so many people that have all these symptoms, and they don't know what it is. You know, we're really still being kept in the dark about it.
Well, there's so many, that would take a whole show to talk about all the things that are sending us back into the medical profession, which is treating us with pharmaceuticals. So, I mean, these industries, they're enormous octopi, and, you know, everything is connected at the corporate level, the global corporate level, as you know.
Yep.
So there are no accidents with all of this, you know.
The thing is that they give us the illusion that people have a voice and that it's, and they keep selling us it's the best democracy, but it's the best government money can buy. But look what just happened in Greece, and no one's talking about this. Well, I found it after, but I saw it right away when it happened. Okay, so they're going to elect a guy who says no more bailouts, and then they do a referendum and get 61% vote, no bailout. And they go, yep, we're going to do the bailout, because the banks will benefit. So too bad, we're going to do the bailout anyway. Well, what do you mean? It doesn't matter. Anybody can lie. It doesn't matter what they put the people through. Austerity doesn't work.
Right.
You don't heal debt by getting more debt.
Right.
But the banks benefit. You know, the storyline, my friend said, well, the people went to get the money out of the bank and they couldn't, and so if they give the bailout, then the people will get their money back. No, they won't.
No, they won't get it back. And then there's negative interest rates where, you know, you put your money in the bank and they take money out instead of giving you interest.
No, and the thing is how does the little guy do anything? Well, and the other thing is that YouTube here, now we're getting monetized, so with your permission, I'll put a show with me in it on my YouTube channel.
Right, and, you have my permission.
And so I got 26,000 hits on my YouTube channel, and it monetized to $1.17.
Oh, my God.
And I have to have like a million hits on on Netflix to get $1,000.
Wow.
It's 2/1,000 of a cent every time I bring someone to my site. Well, how are you going to eat on that?
Then you have to go to the store and buy GMO foods and food that's all dead. There's no living food in the grocery store.
The Pyramid Code, when it first came out, was number 2 on the Amazon bestseller list in its category. And for a 3-month period of time, my royalties were $400. Well, that's not accurate. But then I go to get my hedge trimmed, and it's $350. Well, wait a minute. You know what I mean? Like, everything is just backwards.
Yeah.
And it's crushing people, and they can't think anymore.
Yep, absolutely. And then we have to think of so many things when we become aware of them that it's just overwhelming. Like, you know, you can't even walk out the door without thinking about, well, I'm passing by the, you know, the smart-ass meter, and, you know, I've got to get some kind of device to protect myself from the radiation. And, you know, I saw a video where they're putting those up at head level in cities. And exposing the the people that are walking by there constantly, their heads are getting radiated. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've
now, everything is designed to just make it so overwhelming. Like, we have a window of tolerance. You know, the whales are beaching themselves, and, you know, I've got no apples in my tree because the bees didn't fertilize it where I had, like, 12 dozen apples last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so now I've got, like, 2 apples. It's like, what?
Wow.
You know, so it's disturbing, and you can say, well, the tree's still there, you know. It's like you can talk yourself in or out of these situations. And most and here's a good one. Dr. Jim Willey, who I really, really respect and listen to him as much as, you know, I scour the Internet looking for his stuff, he had a thought, and I am crediting him with it because I did not think this, but he said, okay, remember Patty Hearst and falling in love with the captors?
Yes.
And you start to have sympathy for the people who are abusing you.
Yes.
Collective Stockholm Syndrome.
Oh, yes.
The government would never hurt us if they... And I have my neighbors, you know, if they say it's safe, it's safe. Well, how come they keep changing the safety levels then? You know, and that, you know, that no, they did. They did tests on that, you know. And so the thing is that, you know, the government is there to help us. You know, it's a real democracy. We're so lucky. Look at all these other countries. And I also call this CNN mentality, the only place you're safe is on your own couch, and the rest of the world's falling apart, but you get to be safe.
Right.
And then there's the whole, I call them Sitchinites, and I'm globalizing here a little bit in terms of these comments, but if the Anunnaki came 450,000 years ago and enslaved us, in order to be giving their gold and we were enslaved by the Anunnaki. What is the corollary of that? We're not enslaved now. Well, isn't that a good trick? And Sitchin is unverifiable, right? Because, you know,
that's
now
right.
We have Mike Heisner, who has a PhD in lost languages, who says his website, sitchinswrong.com. And having a PhD in linguistics, you know, the Chinese sit in a chair, we sit on a chair. Well, little turn of phrase, a preposition, something, a gender difference, a verb tense that's translated out of a language that doesn't work like ours, and you've got a completely different story.
Mm-hmm.
So he told us this big story, but and he also had an office in the Rockefeller Tower. Well, then what does that add up to?
Right.
Okay? So if you've really got your ear to the ground and you're really listening, we're still hooped.
Oh, well, yeah. And the funny thing is that, you know, I just wrote a comment on Facebook in a group, and somebody was asking about, you know, freedom and this and that, and I said, well, we've been enslaved. We've been born into slavery. We're all enslaved. The greatest trick that was ever pulled was to convince us that there wasn't a devil, you know, and that we were enslaved at birth. You know, Wall Street got our birth certificate, and we've been enslaved for hundreds of thousands of years, at least back to the time that you're talking about, and who knows who did it or how it occurred, how we initially gave up our freedom and our choices and our sovereignty, but we did at some point, and now it's just a matter of maintaining that and then increasing the frequencies that are holding us in. And so the greatest trick that the control system can do is make us think that we're free. And all that...
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, now there's levels of this. Now, it's so horrifying if you think about it. So after I went through the whole radiation thing, I had a friend who went off wheat, and then she decided she had to be grain-free. And I'm like, well, is there something wrong with it? And so I started looking into it, and it wasn't that I was sick or anything.
Right.
And so I started, you know, I went gluten-free, and then I went vegan, gluten-free for 3 months, vegan for 6 weeks, and then I realized, no grain, I can't do it. So now I've been grain-free for a year, and I'm used to it. But psychologically, I go in the grocery store and say, well, I can't have any of that. Well, I already was doing that. You can't have anything of the inside aisles, you know.
Right.
But, you know, you can't have those vegetables, and you can't have these carbs, and you can't have this, and you can't have that. And I walk out of the grocery store, you know, with a book and a bag of beans. You know, it's like, it's such a betrayal.
Yeah,
it's like, who would think that they're poisoning our food?
Right.
But then,
right.
You know, I look in people's grocery carts now, and I say, and then I look at the person, I go, yep, you eat that.
I do the same thing.
But the thing is, it's a betrayal. And then all these people go, what do you mean? I mean, high in grains. And as they take another bite of the bread, they're not sick right now. But I wasn't sick when I started. But then I realized this whole thing wasn't working at all.
Right.
But, I mean, there reaches a tolerance point where you just can't take it anymore. And it's frightening. Glyphosate, which is round in the water table, and no matter how, I don't have a thing in my house that's not okay, but still, there's, what is it? I have the best water purification thing. There's still stuff that bothers me. What are we breathing it? There's chemtrail. Like,
yep.
It, for people who are just starting, who have this Stockholm syndrome that think the government's on their side, the window of tolerance is too small. They can't cope with the idea. And they,
yep.
You know, they're the ones who have to say we're so lucky and we're doing so well and look at all those poor people that you see on the news.
Yep.
Well, why are those people
it.
Poor? Because of the system that goes and, you know, perpetuates war and everything else. I mean, so to you don't really want to wake people. I mean, I certainly never force people to, you know, I don't tell them, you know, you should think this or. If there's
right.
no ears to hear it and there's no eyes to see, there's nothing to say. And
right.
I've realized recently that my joy in these conversations comes from interviewers like you. And, you know,
thank
you're
you.
Very strong on the list. That you're so informed that you can ask the questions and it becomes a conversation. And I think the audience kind of goes, oh, he knows, she knows, and she knows, he knows.
Uh-huh.
What am I missing?
Uh-huh.
And then it perpetuates digging around a little and finding some information, if you're so inclined.
Exactly.
But really, there comes a point where how much betrayal can we cope with? How many lies, you know, just, you know, any of the categories, pharmaceuticals, smart meters, you know, wheat, you know, GMO.
Yeah.
Exhausting.
And the next big thing that I see coming around the corner is nanotechnology, because, again, the technology that's held in private hands, in corporate hands, is so far advanced. It's at least 100, maybe 200 years in the future that we can imagine, and you would almost have to watch Star Trek to be able to comprehend what is really going on. And it's so incomprehensible that corporations could maneuver so quickly, and then hang NASA as a poster boy, and bring over, you know, a Nazi criminal, war criminal, to run it from Project Paperclip, and he's dead now. But you know, that was just a front cover. That was just the cover poster boy for, you know, all of us to go, oh, we're going into space, yeah. When the real technology was being held in private hands, and the bankers and the corporations, and, you know, at a certain level. Certain people know, and everything's compartmentalized, and then that takes you down the road of the three-letter agencies, and then they get involved, and then you get into Black Ops, and you get into Area 51, and blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on and on, and it's an endless system of control and domination that is so overwhelmingly pervasive that you can't see it. You're in the forest, and all you see is a tree or a limb or a branch. Maybe you don't even see that. You can't even see
well,
in front of
pervasive,
your face.
Pervasive and perverse.
Yeah, and
but the thing is that I followed every word of that because I'm up to date on all those subjects.
Yes.
And
yes, you
other
are.
other people who aren't may just be going, what was that? What did he just say? But if you start to dig around, and that is the beauty of Internet, I mean, we still need to value what we've got. And all I'm saying is give credit where credit is due and go to the original source. Don't. You know, just keep copying other people's copying, and that's what the Sitchinites are doing.
Mm-hmm,
Sitchin
mm-hmm.
said, therefore it's true. No, Sitchin's unverifiable. You
that's
need other
right.
source. You need other sources. And
that's
when I'm
right.
talking about Atlantis or the Pyramid Code, there are ancient texts. And
yeah.
one of the beauties is the ancient texts now are online because if they're older, if the copyright is older than 75 years old, it's online, but it doesn't mean you get to say it's yours. You still have to quote the person. In the page number and know who wrote it and who the original source is, you still have to respect that. And
oh, absolutely.
I don't have to carry 25 bookshelves of books because it's more than that. It's 14 libraries of books.
Well,
you know,
Carmen, what are some of the ancient texts that you would advise people if they wanted to dig deeper into these subjects that we're talking about? And what are some of the websites that you use
I mean, there's Google Scholar. It's
okay.
a very long trail in. You have to know how to do it.
Okay.
And you don't just have a book and say, you know, this is the whole nine yards. Because pretty much anything that's ever been written about Akhenaten and Nefertiti is like completely hideously wrong, making them freaks, and you know, and you know, they're saying Tut, you know, had a club foot and a hair lip. No, this is all a medical model, all mixed up. You have to trace the thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I read all those ancient texts as a young girl.
Oh, woman, wow.
And went, what? And it would stir me up and make me feel sick. And then I went through 10 years of research and going into Egypt and field work and blah, blah, blah. And then I read them all again. And I'm like, oh, there's a little crumb. Oh, there's a little crumb. Like, we expect the whole loaf. Like, when you say, what book do you recommend? That's like the whole loaf.
Well, right, right,
that's,
right.
You get a crumb here and there.
That's right.
And a
that's
lot
right.
of crosswires. It's kind of like scriptwriter's fantasy in a movie, like Stargate. The first half hour is pretty good. And
yeah,
then it's everybody
yeah.
shooting everybody, and you get cross-wired. And
yeah,
you,
that's right.
You know? And so, yeah, and then I read all those books a third time and got a little bit more. But I can see how it's patriarchal ways of being and thinking, the old boys' club all smoking their cigars together, Champollion, Freud, all of them, right? And so what's needed is the discernment and the sorting system and the way to reference and to say where the ideas come from. Mm-hmm. And put together something in a scholarly fashion. But that takes a lot of time and a lot of energy. And there's, I could never recommend a book. And even in modern books, like, who, you know, recommend a book, I'm saying, sorry. You know, you need to read 100 books to find maybe 100 crumbs, if you're lucky, and put
well,
that
Carmen,
together your
no.
way.
We always get so wrapped up in our subjects that we could go on for hours. And, you know, I'd love to talk some more and you know, really get into, you know, we peeled away a few layers, and we've run out of time. And so I think people are just going to have to wait until we can have you back. And let's have you back soon. And before we go sign off, I want to thank you for coming back. And I want you to mention, you know, your website so that people can find you.
Okay, so the Indiegogo campaign is called The New Atlantis. And interactive-letteru.com, pyramidcode.com, and we're coming up with thenewatlantis.ca. I've registered the domain, but it's not populated yet. And but we didn't even talk about the new dig, Lance.
I know. I thought for sure that would be the first topic on your mind. But okay, will you come back within a few weeks and just talk about that?
Yes.
Okay, you got it. Okay.
Okay, so let's be in touch, and I really appreciate, you know, how you ask your questions and how you bring the story, and that you listened about the academic writing part, and that we're failing so badly. People have got the wrong message about what the internet can and should
absolutely.
Be.
Absolutely.
And
we've got to, you know,
stealing.
Continue to share about that. Carmen, thank you so much. You are just an amazing person. You're one of my favorite people on the planet. And we will be in touch, and I'll have you back hopefully within a month, if that's doable, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot. Good night, everybody.